I's the fly that builds a boat, and I's the fly that sails her. I's the fly that catches a fish and takes him home to Lizer.
I can't hear anything. Though this is Boat Talk, time for Boat Talk here on Community Radio, WERU-FM Blue Hill. Boat Talk is a call-in show for people contemplating things naval. I'll give you the call-in number to call in. It's 207-618-8819. And John's going to be doing the boatyard report first, so if you wait until after John to call in, anything that's crossed your mind as far as a boat-related question will work for us. We pretend to be experts on the radio, so 618-8819. I guess, John, are you ready to go with the boatyard report?
Yep.
Okay.
All right. One of the first places I stopped, in fact, I think it was, and I may have mentioned it in the last one, I stopped at Farron's Boat Shop. They had just launched a 42-foot mussel ridge for Tom McNulty from Senior from Cape May, New Jersey. And she was launched from the Gamage Yard. And she was an interesting build. It took 15 months to complete her. They went all through, did everything under the deck, which included 800-gallon fuel tank, all the running gear. The engine was a C-18 Caterpillar. They had a Northern Lights generator. She had storage aft, rope lockers, tuna tank, and there was a vacuum flush head system added in. Let's see what else have we got here. Down below was really, really finished out well. This four berths, the V berths, so upper and lower. And then on the port side was the head with a separate shower. To starboard was a utility locker that actually housed the a lot of the fishing gear. Also, the electrical system was in a closet inside that. Then up in the shelter, there was a sort of a helm station, nav station, whatever you want to call it, on the port side. And then behind that was a settee and nicely done with a scallop on the table in the middle. And then opposite that was a full galley. And then forward of that on the starboard side at the bulkhead, of course, was the real helm station. And with everything that you could imagine for electronics, this guy really likes Furuno. So he had two chart plotters, a sounder, time zero navigational software, a flare system, a Starlink satellite computer, autopilot, two VHFs, and Fusion stereo. If you go to sea, you might as well have stereo. But anyways, beautiful, beautiful boat. And the owner I got to talk to the owner because he had actually taken it probably towards the end of the month in October. And he took her down to Cape May and had a really nice ride. He says even when it got really, really nasty off of Cape May because it was a southwest breeze, he said that the boat just handled it really, really well. And he was very impressed with having the boat finished off at Farron's Boat Shop, who is one of the best-known finishers on the coast. Now, one of our listeners wanted to know about Hindu. Okay, Hindu. So Hindu is a boat that was built by the Hodgson brothers of East Boothbay in 1925. She was launched as the Princess Pat. She's been through several name changes. She's 61-foot, 3-inch auxiliary schooner. And since the late 40s, I believe, she's been running out of Provincetown doing whale watching. And the people who own her now are still doing that. But she came to Thomaston. And she's just across, and many of you that will know this, she's right across from where the prison used to be. If you look to the right side, if you're headed south, there's a plastic shed, and there's one of those silver slugs, one of those, is it an Airstream? You know, the aluminum.
Yeah, with the rounded
RV.
Ends.
This is an RV. With, I think it's got three axles on the back end of it. So anyway, but basically that whole boat's being totally rebuilt. The keel is Purple Heart, and then the frames are Black Locust, and they are now starting to planker with Doug Fir. And when I was there, they had six strakes on either side, and they were getting ready to actually finish the planking this winter, do the deck, and hopefully have her into the water. That's the plan, and back sailing this coming summer.
Purple Heart's pretty...
just take those off.
Purple Heart's pretty hard to work with. It's very stiff and splintery and expensive.
Yeah, and it was interesting because Maynard Bray has done an awful lot for these guys. And what they're doing is they're trying to make sure that this boat is built to so it's for basically preservation. They're using the best woods that they can. Not originally what she was built with,
okay.
Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
You know, you'd think that you'd go back to your original, you know, basically cedar or mahogany over oak, but they haven't.
Yeah.
So, and that's the whole plan is that this boat is going to be upgraded so that it lasts even longer than the original did, which is pretty good because she's almost 100 years old now.
Yeah.
And I don't know if she's actually gone through a rebuild before this. But then the interior is going to be done by the owner and his father, Josh Rowan, and his father is William. And they're going to go over the next 5 years and actually put the interior together and put her back together. Because mostly when they
years.
Go out. Huh?
5 years?
Well, you know.
Yeah.
Now Josh can only work on it in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically, I can't remember how many days they do steady, 130 days, something like that, going from, say, May to October, running charters out of Provincetown, going out whale watching.
Oh.
So yeah. That's what they're using her for. And you don't really need much of an interior when you're doing whale charters.
No, you're know. Looking out, not
right.
in.
So then they had another boat there called Bloodhound. The Bloodhound is kind of an interesting boat because it's British.
Strange name, too.
Right. And so she was at Lyman Morse, and she was getting winterized. And they were trying to find a way to get a new engine for her. And they had actually developed a nonprofit to kind of help, you know, defray some of the costs because, you know, you're rebuilding a schooner totally and then adding an engine for another one. That can get pretty costly pretty quick.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that project is, you know, well along. Richard Stanley, most of you all know Richard because he's Ralph Stanley's son. He's down in Brunswick, and I caught up with him, and he's getting pretty close to finishing up the interior of this Alden schooner that he's been working on for an owner that lives around the Brunswick or Yarmouth area. And she's beautiful. I mean, he had to redo... Let's see, most of the floors, most of the frames, and the frames he had to put in because he opened up a set of strakes right amidships, right down the center just above the waterline,
mm-hmm.
and he had to shove them down and then shove them up, and you know, so there was a lot of hammering.
With the deck on, that's how you had to do it, right?
So, anyways. So she's pretty well buttoned up and ready, and then he's going to go over and work on Iroquois, which is a 60-foot Greeby powerboat was built in the early 60s. And he's got a lot of work to do on that one, and he hopes to have that one in the water in the spring. And this Alden sailboat may not be too far behind that. Because right now he was doing the ceiling, putting that back together, because when they did all of the alterations with the floors and the frames and all of this, they kind of changed the shape of the boat. Like she went back to her original shape, so some of the bulkheads were a little off, so he had to change the bulkheads.
So there were some corrections.
Which there usually is when you start doing massive rebuilds like that.
Yeah.
And then in the same building with Richard, I don't know how many of you run around Portland Harbor or Casco Bay, but there's a company called Fogg, and Dennis Fogg and his son Patrick have been building these aluminum taxi boats to run around Portland Harbor and out to the islands. And they got so successful that they've been building catamarans recently. Well, he now has got an order for two of them to go, I think, to New York. And in my last issue of Maine Coastal News, I showed you a picture of the boat sitting on a pallet. It's a big pallet, but it's all flat, but it's all been cut out. So somebody water jetted the metal, and now all I got to do is kind of just put it together.
Oh, really?
So I would bet when I go back there this week, maybe not this week, but early next week, I'll go down and I'll take a picture and they'll have the boat.
It's basically a kit boat.
Yes, basically. That's how it comes. Peter Buxton, I just stopped in and just left him about 45 minutes ago. I think the last time I was here, they had maybe just done a few of the frames. But the following day, he and two other guys framed the whole boat. Now, this is a 34-footer wooden boat that he's building. And today when I stopped in, he had most of the planking from the garboard maybe halfway up. You know, it hadn't got to the turn of the bilge back aft yet. And it was interesting watching him running the plank lines and stuff and seeing how that. And then he'll go up and start from the shear strake and work his way down.
With the planks, you mean, yeah.
And he explained why you do that. Now, some builders will do it from bottom right up to the shear.
Yeah.
But he said, you got to be really, really good, because if the lines don't come out right, you could have a funny-looking plank in the top.
Oh, right, yeah.
So.
Yeah, hard to plan ahead.
Yeah. So, and then Gloucester Marine Railway. Now, we don't usually talk about the boats that are, you know,
out of state.
But what was interesting was I ran across Harold Burnham, who some of you might know. He's a boat builder in Essex, Massachusetts. And he's one of the Burnhams, because there was a lot of big names in Essex boat building. The Tar, Story, some of the bigger names. And of course, Burnham. Well, Harold, who also owns the Savina Beale, which he's getting ready to do some work on, he was there working on the Ernestina Morrissey. Now, Ernestina came up and was totally rebuilt at Booth Bay Shipyard. Mm-hmm. Now it's, what is it, the shipyard at Booth Bay Harbor. Bristol Marine is the company that oversees that. They did a beautiful job on her. She's gorgeous. But she needed to have some caulking done. But she was up on the railway, and next to her was Adventurer. So you have two of the old Gloucester schooners from the early 1900s mm-hmm. sitting there, you know, having some work done.
I assume you got a picture of that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That would be one. Good
yeah.
one.
And if you turned it black and white, you couldn't tell a year.
True.
I didn't put any cars in it. And I also today stopped in a Usen company. Now, most of you who go from Surrey to Blue Hill will know where Usen company is. It's on the left side a few miles before you get into Blue Hill. Well, Usen Company, they do very interesting work. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that is really interesting is that they go down and they, if you go to Brooklyn Boatyard, they're doing a 55-foot wheeler. Well, most of that boat was produced at Usen Company. What they do is they cut out all of the partitions, all of the bulkheads. They've got, you know, because they use CNC machines.
Yeah, they have a very big one there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so it's, and then they just did all of the work on the 90-footer or 95-footer that's under construction at Rockport Marine. And then they're also doing some other projects up and down the state. Oh, they got a big one at, Rob Stevens designed it. He's from Belfast. He designed this sailboat that they're going to build at Artisan in Rockport. And that's about a 40-footer. And he's also, Rob Stevens also designed a powerboat, and that's going to be done at Belmont Boat, which is out on Route 3 going towards.
Yeah, heading towards Augusta.
Yeah, on the right side.
Yeah.
So then I went to Oceanville Boatworks today, and they were working on a 44 Calvin Beale boat, which is basically a sport fish boat. And most of the structural work is done. And Dale, who's one of the owners of the company, he was actually working, sanding down all of the nice joiner work that they're going to put in it, which is all mahogany. Then I covered a story, and it's interesting that not many people covered this story. But did you know that on the 8th of October, we lost one of our schooners?
Lost a schooner. I didn't know that. No.
Well, it was close to you. The Janet May, which is was now known as the Bailey Louise Todd, went aground.
Oh, yeah.
She went up on the backside of Bar Island and totally became kindling, which is kind of sad.
Yeah.
But what I was lucky is one of the boat builders is Dan Banman. He was one of the builders of the boat. There was only two. Phil Shelton was the lead carpenter on it because Phil had come from a long line of boat builders on Long Island. And they built it up in Columbia Falls. And most people who are old enough, like us, will remember when they were coming down the Narragansett River, the Coast Guard forced the DOT to open up the bridge. Because the DOT didn't want to open the bridge because it hadn't been open for so long, so they didn't know what they were going to get themselves. But anyways, everything worked out, and they were able to slip her through, and then they actually put a rig in Millbridge. But so she sailed a lot of years out of Bar Harbor, but then she was sold down to New Haven in Connecticut to a group that actually was taking kids out on educational sails. And then I think they went belly up. And so then she came back to Bar Harbor. But anyways, and then that's about it.
Okay. Well, I was going to talk about a newspaper article that I read that scared me a little bit. And turned out it's actually an old piece of information that made the newspaper just recently. It concerns voter education law that's going to take effect on January 1st of next year. The newspaper article said it requires anyone operating a motorboat of 24 horsepower or greater for recreational use in inland waters or territorial waters. That's basically offshore within about 3 miles, territorial waters. They need to complete a boat safety and education course. This course is something that you can get information online, but it's actually something you have to, you have to show up in person and take, you know, a test like you do for driver education. So I called up the Inland Fisheries and Wildlife to see if the article that I was reading is correct, and fortunately, it's not correct. It's an old article. The law now takes effect January 1st, as I said before, but it's only for people who are 25 years of age and younger. So,
hey, we're all set.
Yeah, we're definitely got that one passed away. So, but there, if you are 25 years of age or younger and have a boat that has, I believe, it's 24 horsepower or greater, you do need to take this test. And there's more information at the Inland Fisheries and Wildlife website, which is maine.gov/IFW. And you can go there and hopefully you can get some more information from that. So
now commercial fishermen are exempt.
Commercial, yep. And maritime merchant marine is exempt. And day use boat runners, those are exempt too. So,
but most of those people would be overage.
Yeah, possibly not the day use, but yeah. the merchant marines, yes, is you're lucky if you're 25 when you start, really. That's quite a bit of training there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You ever been over the academy?
Yep, I've been there a couple of times.
I took a year off and did courses there. That was interesting.
Oh, really?
Yep. Yeah.
You were.
Well, when I owned that tugboat, that was one of the foolish things I did.
Yes.
Yeah. You really kind of need to know what you're doing because it's not a boat. It's a ship, basically a baby ship. But it was interesting to see the kids there that and how that whole place operates. It's really impressive.
Yeah. I have a son of a good friend of mine who graduated from there, and he's now in the Merchant Marine. And you're right, you got a very good training there.
Yeah. I mean, and it's fun to go through the classes. If I could, if I had time, I'd go back again in a second.
We should have some of those professors on here once in a while and talk about some of these subjects.
I can do that.
Yeah. Pick a subject, yeah.
Because they've got some good stories. I mean, I remember one that came and talked, I think, at a Propeller Club meeting. And unfortunately, Propeller Club is no longer, but which is a merchant marine group. And he was talking about going into Antarctica and looking at watching the penguins. Because the penguins will push off a penguin into the water just to see what's in the water that might be harmful. And they just want to see what will happen.
So, yeah, you don't want to be the first guy on the edge. Oh, boy. Yeah. You can make those penguins feel a little bit less than donkey to get it thrown in there.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to your boatyard report, we've mentioned a couple of times of restorations of classic old boats, and I have a little philosophy on the restorations of old boats that's, I call it the Duesenberg effect, where when you restore a classic like that, it should be, well, I believe, should be as original as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than changing the wood types or whatever, just, you know, like when you restore a Duesenberg, you don't change the wood types and that, or the chrome or for brass or whatever. But it's as you said, the rebuilding it with wood to make it more durable is certainly a good argument against that, too.
Yeah, but look, the original lasted 100 years.
Yeah,
that's not too bad, and it also depends on how well she was taken care of.
Yeah,
and I did, like I said, I also don't know if she had a rebuild in the middle. You know, did somebody do a major rebuild?
Right. Yeah, if you get down to changing the frames, you're doing a pretty major rebuild.
I remember one time walking in, and they were doing a big powerboat, and I asked the person who was the lead guy on the boat, and I says, what's going to be original in this? He says, her name.
The name, yes.
And pretty much that was about it, because I think there was maybe a piece from the keel that was left on top of the keel that they replaced it with.
Yeah, and a while back I had a listener call up who wanted to report on Hindu down in the Thomaston, and you went and visited them. That's an interesting history there.
It is, and you know, you kind of wonder, you know, what else is available on her, because she was originally launched as a pleasure boat, you know, but I don't know any of her background history, you know, and trying to maybe find that out now is not going to be easy, you know.
Oh, you're the one.
No, there's other people who can, you know, this Maynard Bray is very, very good at that sort of stuff, you know, and then Tim Hodgson at Hodgson Yachts, who's now running it, although I think his daughter's getting ready to because she's actually running, I think she runs the limousine part of it, because anybody that's going down the Route 1, just before you get to Damariscotta, there used to be a building on the right that was for diamond plows. That's where Hodgson does their yacht tenders, and that's a pretty impressive company. And right now they just came back from Monaco. Because they do a lot of tenders for these big mega yachts. So, and those things aren't cheap.
The tenders.
They're $1-3 million a pop.
Yeah. they are just the cab to take you back and forth from the boat to shore, too.
And they're all European looking. You know, some of them are completely covered in, you know, like a top that's all glass or something. They're different.
Oh, you mean like Italian style sweep?
Yeah. No pot hauler.
No pot hauler.
No. Not much good.
No. So that's the report for Hindu, for hopefully the person who made that request is listening now.
Yeah, it looks like they're going to definitely get the boat in the water next summer and have her back to Provincetown for the season, which is going to be a push. But they brought in another. There was three guys there when I was there, but they also brought in, I think, another three or four guys to finish up the planking quicker. So
I think the phones are back working now. 618-8819, if you tried to call earlier, we're having a little technical difficulties, but it works now, 618-8819, if you'd like to join the conversation here at Boat Talk, we'll venture off course in most any direction.
So getting back to this license, what do you think about that?
The law?
Yeah.
Well, I've seen some little kids that kind of scared me in powerboats.
How big a powerboat?
Oh, is
just outboards?
Probably still within the limit. I'd say maybe 5 horse or something, you know. Mm-hmm. But you can get pretty fast in a 5 horse in a little aluminum boat or something.
That'll, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But, even one of those little inflatables. Although with an inflatable, they just bounce off whatever they hit.
Yeah. What's the word? Where you ram cars together at the
demolition derby.
Demolition derby,
yeah.
On the water.
Yeah. It's kind of like NASCAR.
Yeah.
Because they do that too.
Yeah. Yeah. Except they don't sink.
No. No. But it's interesting because, you know, I've been around fishermen's kids who, you know, 5 years old, and they can handle a boat better than most people.
Sure. Yeah.
Even some that have had a lot of years of experience, they know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, I think if I think back to my childhood, I would start doing it even if I didn't know what I was doing. And that's, the scary part.
Mm-hmm.
Some kids are
But, you know, you look back,
dangerous.
And Giffy Full is one that's told me stories. I don't think he was – I think he was just out of high school. Maybe he was still in high school. But he decided he and a couple of his friends from Marblehead went sailing all across Mass Bay out to the Cape,
uh-huh.
You know. And
without parental permission, right?
Without parental guidance. They parents probably knew.
Oh.
But the thing is that back then you were able to do a lot more. And people – and they got away with it, you know, because they knew how to handle a boat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but you try that today. You know how many law people would be at the house?
Yeah,
parents would be locked up.
Yeah, you'd be on the bad news list on Facebook for sure. So 618-8819 if you'd like to join the conversation here too, or any sort of a boating related question, you can give us a call 618-8819.
So getting back to restorations, what's the most extensive restoration you ever did?
Well, that's probably an interesting story. being an old Hinckley person, I'm pretty familiar with those. And this was back in the turn of the century, when this economy started to go sour and all the boating companies were laying people off like crazy.
The 90s?
Yeah.
With the luxury tax?
Yes, yeah. So I was one of those people laid off. You know, I had all the benefits and all that sort of stuff, which is fine. I was able to pick up work just by talking to other people. But the boatyard where I used to work had a Hinckley 50 that was going to be a major restoration for the owner. Of course, they were down to the bare crew, too, which happened to be a couple of kids who had just graduated from the landing school,
mm-hmm.
and learned how to make basically small wooden boats. And their job was to remove the interior of this big boat, which is pretty far from what they had learned. So we do have a phone call, so I'm going to stop the story and go to Jimmy in Steuben. Hello, Jimmy. Welcome to Boat Talk.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm truly sorry to interrupt the story. I came across something called a ghost ship in a movie recently, which I'd never heard of. And I'd just be really interested on you guys, whatever fix you have about ghost ships.
Well, you're a little late for Halloween.
Apparently, phantom ship is another term for it. But anyway, if you have anything to say, I'd love to hear it.
Well, I happen to know a little bit about that. It was probably 150 years ago or so when old sailing ships were the only form of commercial trade, you know. And after a certain while they just became too much of a maintenance and they were trying to retire. So one of the ways they would do it would be just to, when the wind is right, just point them out to sea and say goodbye and figure they're going to sink somewhere. But sometimes they don't. Sometimes they'll drift around in the fog and, you know, unmanned ship looking all in tatters, quite like a ghost ship.
You know, the other one that I would remember is the War of 1812 and the dash from Harpswell. And they see every once in a while that people think they see that in the fog.
Oh, yes. That's a true ghost ship. Yeah. Yeah.
Because they never knew what happened to her. She all of a sudden just disappeared out there with all of her crew.
So we have another phone call. So
yep.
Let's go to that one. Welcome to Boat Talk.
Hi, Alan. It's Mark Laddie from
Hi, Mark.
Inland Fisheries and Wildlife.
Good.
How you doing?
Good, good. We were just talking about the education rule that's going to take effect in January. Why don't you explain it a little better than I could?
Yeah, certainly. You know, starting January 1st, 2024, so this January 1st, there's a new law that's going to require people under the age of 25 or those born after January 1st, 1999 to take a boater safety course if they want to operate a motorboat of 25 horse or larger. And so they can take that boating safety course in person through one of our boating safety instructors that we have throughout the state, or they can take it online, and there's three different courses that you can take, and they vary in cost from free to $35. So there's a lot of options for people, and it's a new law that becomes effective this January 1st.
So for 25 and under, how are you getting your message to these people who are that age?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, so one is through everyone. We have an email list of over 500,000 names that people come to us for licenses. They come to us for permits. They come to us for boating registrations, a variety of things. So that's we'll use that email list to do that. We'll also be emailing people by lifetime licenses from us. So that's going to be some of the people who are impacted. We'll be mailing them and emailing them as well. We'll be utilizing our social media channels to get the word out. And, of course, we'll be using, you know, traditional media as well. So, you know, there's a bit of a ramp-up period here. It's a new law, and with any new law, there's an educational component or educational period with it. So even though the law takes effect, you know, January 1st, really January is not the greatest boating month in Maine. So we've got some time there before the ice goes out and people start boating in the springtime.
Huh. What caused this to be implemented?
Well, I think really, usually Maine's a leader in a lot of things, but in this we certainly lag behind. And Maine is only one of five states that doesn't have some type of boating safety requirement, boating safety education requirement. And so it's been proposed for many years, but just never gained traction in the legislature before. You know, the past couple of years, it started to get debated more and actually passed a couple of years ago, actually passed 2 years ago, but then got amended this year to be implemented January 1st. And I think there were a couple of high profile fatalities where, you know, people were either struck by a motorboat or, you know, somebody operating a motorboat wasn't paying attention and struck a swimmer or a person. And so there were a couple of high-profile injuries and fatalities that I think caught the legislature's attention, plus the fact that Maine was one of the few that did not require boating safety education. And I think that's what really, you know, propelled it to be implemented.
Do you find that all of those incidents happened on inland waters?
Well, my expertise is inland waters, being at Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. But, you know, no, and this law impacts both salt, tidal waters, and fresh waters. So it's a statewide law. When it was originally passed 2 years ago, it was only going to be inland waters. But they revised the law and put it into effect this January, and that includes all of Maine's water, both tidal and inland.
Because, see, I think all of the incidents that happened with fatalities didn't happen on – those happened on inland waters, right?
Well, again, the ones that I'm familiar with, but I would only report on or only cover those that happened on inland waters.
Because the only fatality –
you know, the boating safety courses, I mean, it's – you know, part of it, you know, it's kind of the nuts and bolts of navigation and things like that, but it's also – you know, knowing your boat, you know, what you should be doing before you get underway, you know, what type of safety equipment you need to have, you know, it's more than just boating safety. You know, it hits a lot of different areas. I think it's something that's going to benefit a lot of people.
Okay. So, how does someone who wants to take the test do that?
Yeah, if you want to take the course, there's a couple ways, but the easiest way is to go right on to our website at mefishwildlife.com. Go to our website, click on the boating link, and right in, under the boating link, you're going to see boating education, and you can click on that, and that'll take you right to where your courses are, and you can take your course right there, or you can look for what courses are being, what courses are being held in the state, and you can see if there's one nearby you.
Okay, I think that's very good. If there's anything else you'd like to add, we'll call that good.
No, I think that's great. Thanks for the opportunity. And just, yeah, come January 1st, those who are under the age of 25 will need to take a boating safety course if they want to operate a boat that's 25 horsepower or more.
Yeah.
What's the youngest age?
Thank you, Alan.
Is there an age limit on the other end on kids?
Oh, you could, I mean, the courses, I'm, you know, the courses are designed for middle, you know, middle school students and up, you know, as far as the reading level. So, I mean, there's no age limit, and you can certainly take it with an adult. You know, I hate to say it, but, you know, the majority of our boating accidents involve people over the age of 25. Because and, they're the ones who can afford boats, but I think it would be, you know, beneficial for, you know, parents and children to take it together. Yeah.
So, but is there's no minimum age? Something here with 12 years of age.
Well, so if you want to operate a boat that's 25 horsepower or more, you need to be. I thought you meant minimum age for taking the course. If you want to operate a boat that's 25 horsepower or more, you need to be over the 12 years or older.
So even commercial fishermen are going
to
be?
Excuse me?
Even commercial fishermen kids are going to have to be?
Everyone. That's what the legislature stated, all tidal and inland waters.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Well, we'll be interested to see how this comes out, and might give you a call a little towards the end of next summer and see just what happens with this.
Yeah, no, be happy to.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mark. And the website
all right,
again?
Guys. What's that?
The website again, just in case.
Yep, mefishwildlife.com.
Okay, thank you very much, Mark.
All right, have a good night, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye.
Well, I think we still have a few minutes left here in boat. Oh, yeah, 20 minutes left. So,
hey, we got to finish your story.
Oh, right. I forget. Yeah. So where were we? The big boat had these young fellows taking it all apart piece by piece. As you can imagine, the inside of a 50-foot boat, it's got a lot of little pieces in it. And they knew how to operate a screwdriver pretty well, so they took it apart pretty carefully and took all the parts up to the attic and put them in one big pile. Yeah. And then
no labels?
No labels. And they quit.
Did they quit because they didn't put the labels on it?
I doubt it. I think they just quit because they decided it just really wasn't the kind of boat building that they were interested in or something. But,
Why? That's not a bad job to do.
It was wintertime. It was a heated building. But anyway, so there was a pile of parts, and they asked me to put it back together.
Yeah. How long did it take you?
About 3 months. Yeah.
So it wasn't too bad.
It wasn't too bad. No, I called up my cousin who has also helped me before. He's a good handy person.
Yeah.
He came up and helped me with that. So the two of us did it in about 3 months.
And yeah.
Of course, you know, all the parts already fit. You know, you just have to figure out where they go.
Why were you rebuilding it?
Because the floor stringers, some of the floor stringers had come loose from the hull. So
okay.
We had to take it all apart just to get to them, which are...
And then re-glass?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have another phone call. Another good phone call. Hello, John in Orland. Welcome.
Hi there. Hey, thank you. And it sounds great. I wanted to ask the question of the gentleman who was on just before about the lake law that says you can't create waves within 300 feet of the shore when you're on a lake. I assume it's going to be going pretty slow within 300 feet, and whether that's really rational or not, whether that really makes sense or not. There's another question I'd like to ask you guys about invasive plants, because we have a lot of concern on lakes for invasive plants and what we do with courtesy boat inspection to take care of some of that, and whether or not there's anything like that along the seashore. Is there any concern about invasives? So those two things would be great to hear you talk about.
As far as I know, there's no saltwater inspections going on looking for pieces of seaweed or anything.
No, so, there's always been problems with big ships. Even back in the old days, there's references to the big ships.
Ballast water
causing big problems.
Yeah.
Because I think that's why we got green crabs here.
Probably.
Because if you go off, I know off Searsport, if you drop a trap in it, you'll fill it full of those little green crabs. Yeah.
So back to your wake question, there is a law. I don't have it here in front of me, but I believe it's 200 or 250 feet where you have to maintain what they call headway speed, which is the minimum speed that you can control your boat at so that you're not making very much of a wake. And if you do, you probably could be receiving a summons from the wake people.
But now, if you're traveling any great distance, this could be a problem.
Well, I think about all those people who go up canals, you know, tearing up and down. You know, they're not going minimum speed.
No, but they're only in a canal.
Yeah, they got houses on both sides.
So, well, it's a fascinating situation because I don't think living on a lake here, Alamosuk Lake, I don't think I've ever seen anybody, you know, really go with that. I mean, it's just almost impossible to do. But on the other hand, if you didn't have that law, then I don't know.
Sometimes, like in my big boat, the slower I go, the bigger the wake is. Because she's dragging a lot. She's a pretty good sized boat. But a lot of these boats, they drag a big wake if they slow them down. Sometimes it's a smaller wake if they're going a little faster. But hull design has a lot to do with that.
Yeah. And that might be a tough one to explain to the Marine Patrol officer.
Yes.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Okay.
Have you ever done a wooden boat rebuild?
Very little. Planks, sister's ribs and, you know, nothing very major.
Because when you worked at Hinckley, they brought over Ralph, didn't they? Ralph Stanley. Because I caught him over there a couple times redoing wooden boats.
Oh, really? No.
Yeah, not a total, but, you know, parts and pieces here and there.
Well, I was only at the Hinckley Company per se for just a little over a year
Okay.
before I transferred to Bass Harbor.
Yeah. which was really part of Hinckley, right?
It was, yeah. It was what they called the Skunk Works.
So who was running it then when you were there?
Bass Harbor?
Yeah.
A man named Frank Kibbe.
Yeah, he was an interesting character.
He was, yeah. Quite a good voice on him.
Oh, yeah, and he was tall, if I remember correctly.
He was tall, yep.
Didn't he actually buy was it aluminum or steel? I think he got it out on the West Coast, and he was cruising between Alaska and New Zealand. And then finally he got a little nervous that, you know, age was catching up with him, and he didn't trust, you know, running it again.
Rust bucket.
Yeah. Well, it was him that was becoming the problem, not the boat.
Oh.
He didn't feel comfortable sometimes with stability, if I remember, because I've run into him a couple times.
Yep. Yeah, that could be true.
Because he ran down and he did that yacht, what was it called? Yacht Saver.
Yacht Savers, yeah, the inflatable.
And then he went down and he did Great Island. He was at Great Island Boatyard. He ran that for a little while.
Uh-huh. You know, he's pretty much fully retired now, I believe.
Yeah. Is he around here?
Lives in Florida.
Oh. Yeah. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. He has an interesting story where he worked with Harlan Beale. Saving a Hinckley 41. There was a charter boat, and two couples had chartered it. One couple knew absolutely nothing about boats, and the other couple dropped an anchor off of some offshore island here somewhere and decided they were going to go row ashore and see what they could find and then come back out. And the unknowing couple stayed on the 41. The boat started to drag its anchor, and the people on board didn't know what to do. They tried calling on the cell phone, and they were able to get the guy to give them instructions as to how to start it up, put it into reverse to hopefully set the anchor better.
Mm-hmm.
They did, and he didn't realize it, but he left it in reverse, and the boat sort of swung around after a while and started to drag itself back into shore.
Mm-hmm.
Finally grounded out, and the tide was leaving, and the boat fell over on its side. Landed on a rock and poked a hole in the side. At that point, they had a call for Frank, who chartered it, and they came out with an inflatable to see what they could do, and called Harlan because it was closer to where he was, and Harlan came out with, because he was experienced on saving boats, came out with all kinds of equipment to try to save the boat. And they did. They were actually able to refloat it and patch the hole and take it back to Stonington where it was fixed.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks to Harlan for saving that boat, because I think it would have been hard to...
Harlan Billings, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, Harlan Billings, yes.
Yep. Yeah, he was a character.
I never met him.
Oh, I've met him quite a few times. In fact, he was one of the first people I ran into when running around the coast, because when you go to Stonington, what's the biggest place in Stonington?
Yeah,
is Billings Diesel and Marine.
The only spot there, really.
Yeah, they're impressive, especially their engine department, which is run by Greg Sanborn.
Well, they did a lot of fish boats there.
But they also do a lot of... yachts, especially some the William Hand that they've got, Nor'easter, which is owned by a family out of Philadelphia. Beautiful boat. And they really use the boat. I think she's been to the Med, always into the Caribbean, up and down the East Coast.
Huh.
Yeah, I think she's around 40, 45 feet. I know Peter Buxton did some work on her a few years ago. You know, doing some woodwork, you know, just maintenance type stuff, but minor, nothing major. So.
Yeah. He died, what, three, 4 years ago now, quite
probably
a while.
Probably three.
Yeah. He was, like you say, quite the character there.
Oh, yeah, and he knew all the people up and down the coast.
Yeah. You still stop there when you go down the Deer Isle?
I was there today.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Always seeing what's going on. I mean, Pauline's still sitting on the railway, the old sardine carrier.
Yeah.
And it's going to be amazing to see if she comes off of it.
What, they're taking the whole top off of it off? Is that
correct? The top's gone. Huh. So she was going to go back to being her regular configuration of a sardine carrier. But I'm not sure the money's there, and so I don't know what's going to go on with her. which is too bad because they did both ends, but now they have to try to do the middle.
Yeah.
And somebody told me the price tag's around $1 million, you know, and, you know, that's kind of hard to justify.
Yeah.
You know, even though the boat should be saved, you know.
There's lots of those, aren't there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, those are the ones you kind of walk away from because they're not free, even though they say they're free.
Oh, yeah. There's no such thing as a free boat, Mike would say.
Yeah. Nope. Nope. They usually come with a lot of baggage.
So we do have a few minutes left. Probably could squeak in one more phone call if you'd like to make one. 618-88919 is the number. 618-88919.
You know, getting it back to the restoration, there's been a lot of them I've seen up and down the coast. And I try to I remember one they were rebuilding down at Benjamin River years and years ago. It was called an ACAT. And the original one was outside, but the rebuild one was inside.
Oh.
And it's interesting to see how different people have different philosophies on how to rebuild them. Because if you go to Mystic Seaport and go to the shipyard, they do every other frame and do that on a bigger vessel.
Right, so it keeps its shape.
Yeah, well, yeah. or the fact is, now when they did Ernestina, basically they cut the whole back end of the boat off and because they had the plans for it, so they just redid the whole thing.
Yeah, we have a phone call. Yep, so let's go to that. Welcome to Boat Talk.
Hey, how you doing? This is John from Thomaston.
Hi, John. Oh, you're down there, aren't you?
I am. I got an old 60s Boston Whaler, 13-footer, that I picked up, that talking about boat restorations. The gel coat is all spider-cracked, and not too deep, but all over the place. And I've been kind of doing some research, and some say just scuff it up and paint over it, and others say you got to go all the way down to the fiberglass, or it'll just come right back in a year. And I didn't know what your opinion was on that.
Gel coat is really hard to put on and build back up to a nice surface. It's made to be sprayed into a mold, a nice smooth mold, and then build up from the outside in. Trying to do it from the inside out is difficult. It can be done, but it's a lot of labor intensive. But with the older whaler like that, one thing I would want to check out is I bet you the core that's between the inside and the outside hull is all waterlogged by now. So you might want to tip it up on end with the drain that's at the very end of the transom and see if you got any water running out of there.
But would you paint it, like all grip it, instead of going with the job?
Yeah. If you know somebody who is a good at spraying all grip, that would be better than gel coat as far as I'm concerned.
And the way I would do that is, go ahead.
I was just going to say, do you have to take the original gel coat all the way down? Or can
no.
you just like smooth it out a little and all coat right over it?
Right, yeah. Well, you do smooth it out and put on a primer and then sand that primer and then spray the gel coat or the all grip.
Yeah. Or Alex Seal.
Another brand. Yeah.
But that's probably easy because what you could do is get it all prepped and then take it to a guy that could shoot it for you.
Right.
You know, and then
I've read it on the internet, you know, looking at stuff that people say they put it on with a roller.
Oh, yeah.
Pan and roller or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, roll and tip. Yeah, but that's quite an art.
Well, Epiphanes has got some interesting paint. And you being right in Thomaston, you may want to talk to the Epiphanes people right down in the bottom of the cove.
Right, right.
Because they have some very, very interesting products. In fact, when I rolled my boat this spring, I didn't tip it, and it came out just like glass, even though it's a wood boat.
Yeah, I've been meaning to go see them. I'm fairly new in town. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I talked to them, see what they've got for an option.
Good point.
Well,
okay, thanks.
Yep. Thanks. Good luck with that.
Thank you.
Well, just about to the end of the boat talk. I think we have only about 2 minutes left and time to wrap up. I don't know if we have anything that I can talk about for 2 minutes quickly. I think we finished up the the rebuilding of the Hinckley story.
Well, it's interesting how many rebuilds have been happened over your career or our career.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially working at Bass Harbor Marine, where that was the service yard for the Hinckley Company. All kinds of damaged boats have gone in and out of there.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that I, talking about restorations and keeping it exactly the same or not, that this Hinckley also had some rotten core around the through hull that was leaking. And that was repaired, and they put balsa back again, which surprised me. I figured, why would you put wood that's going to rot again around there? But, of course, they sealed it up, so in theory it's not going to get wet again.
Right.
But
because did they not seal it right the first time?
Apparently not, no.
Right.
Because
a lot of people just drill the hole and then just shove the through hole fitting
through. Yeah, put some bedding on it and call it good, but no, that doesn't work.
No, because I know a lot of people take it in, about an inch? Take the core out for about an inch and use hull and deck?
Inch would be great. I go with more like a half an inch, but just something that I use a thickened epoxy, but same thing. So we've sailed to the end of the XLR's boat talk this week.
Walk the plank.
Yeah, walk the plank. Thanks to Pippin down in the engine room.
Boat and I survive and sails her. I survive the catches of fish and takes them home to Lizer.